Many newspapers have called it the greatest club game ever. The strength of Munster rugby has always been the big boys up front.
I'm actually really, really excited for it.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM. With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Every Monday morning here on OTBAN, we give you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do to enter is get in touch with your suggestions. Plenty of shouts this morning. We're going to be getting through the Formula One, Premier League, the boxing, the rugby over the next little while. But we're actually going to start in the bad with Gaelic games, and GAA officials are in the red here. Not so much the performance of GAA officials, Ger, but it's been a bad weekend for them. It's always a bad weekend for GAA officials when you see a referee in a spot of bother himself at full time. And I think that was certainly the case in the Padraig Pearce's Mount Belly Moylock game on Saturday. Padraig Pearce has won by a point. Jerome Henry had to be escorted off the field.
Yeah, I think like the timing of this couldn't be any worse. Obviously, it's horrific, right? And we have a crisis in refereeing across all of our sports, as we've just had highlighted to us by the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Sport having a hearing about the crisis in refereeing. That was brought to the public's attention because underage football referees have gone on strike. And the GAA made a big show of coming out and talking about their experience with referees. This just doesn't tally with what we were told a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, Peter Fitzpatrick is one of the guests. He obviously is an elected politician, but he's also the county board chairman of the Louth County Board. Pardon me. And, you know, he was talking about respect for referees and how important that is. But equally, he was the man who had said the referee was Dick Turpin without a mask, or at least Dick Turpin wore a mask whenever the Louth Meath match happened, and that, you know, famous goal that stole a provincial title from Louth, from Joe Sheridan, right? So I tweeted it. Ironic that he's, you know, saying this. He's also the same person who's saying it. But the response from everybody was like, yeah, but he was right. Like, what happens here is that the referee gets pushed and jostled and chased and harried, and I would say legitimately fears for his safety. And again, no Gardaí on the field. Stewards are slow enough to get there. There's enough period of time for him to feel concerned about his health and safety. But there is a lot of support on social media for the players who were doing to the referee what they did yesterday. And you have to ask, what's the response going to be like of the people who bump into and who are in the circumference and in the ether of anybody who's involved in those types of incidents? They're going to say, yeah, you know, just a referee. Geez, he really rolled us. They're not going to say you disgraced us and you brought the game into disrepute and you shouldn't have done what you did. That's not the environment that this exists in. Like, this doesn't come from one individual thinking, I'm going to go on a solo run here. This comes from a culture. And the culture that we have is to blame referees and to think that it's okay to get physical with people. Like, the sport is physical, but the off-the-ball stuff, the sucker punching, the pulling and dragging, and the accepted violence, the levels of it that we just put up with, they foster a culture within which it's okay to run 50 yards and push a referee. And, like, how many people will actually tell anybody who was involved in laying hands on a referee that they were disgraceful for what they did? In that club, will people turn around to him and say, that was a disgrace, you shouldn't have done that, you've dragged our name through the mud? I don't think they will. I don't believe they will. And I don't believe that anybody told the people who did that to the referee, to Sludden in, was that a decade ago at this stage? It was. Like, and I don't believe that clubs, and I don't believe that the culture polices people who get involved with referees. I think you turn a blind eye to it when it's your team. And I don't know if there's any fix for this on. Like, they should obviously be suspended. I don't think Mount Belly Moylock should be allowed to play in a Connacht Championship for a year. If the next time that they win a county championship, they should be banned automatically for a failure to control their players. But that won't happen. There'll be ways around it. And if there are suspensions, those suspensions will be appealed, and you know, what will it end up being? 3 months, 6 months maybe? And in a split season, does 6 months even matter?
The main flare-up incident that seems to be spoken about in the aftermath of the game was this mark not being awarded to Mount Ballymoylock, and Padraig Pearce who got up the pitch and scored a winner as a result of that. And I guess what you're alluding to there on social media is this acceptance that, you know, the decision was a bad one, and as a result the reaction was understandable if not acceptable. That seems to be the free pass that a lot of GAA teams in particular get.
Oh, everybody. I'm sure what choice did they have but to protest? Because if they don't protest, he's going to protest for them. Like, the reason that we didn't put Mount Ballymoylock in the red and we put officiating in the red generally is because it's a very, very difficult game to officiate, and the referees probably have bad performances. I mean, the other thing is these players never have bad performances. Like, there wasn't ample opportunity for Mount Ballymoylock to get the ball back in that last minute and a half and prevent the score. Oh wait, there was loads, and then they got themselves dragged into a series of rows. Anyway, look, that aside, right, the other main point I think from this is that game has become almost impossible to referee. If you listen to the commentary, Tommy tweeted a link to the commentary yesterday. If you listen to the commentary, the commentators all say, oh, he's disallowed that because he was inside the 45, and so the mark shouldn't have counted. There's two or three of them who saw that in live time up high, actually with the pitch markings easier to see, and they couldn't tell that it was a true mark. So if the referee makes a mistake, the referee makes a mistake. But again, like, there's a million different things that the referee has to try and manage, including where in the pitch the ball gets kicked before it was did the ball touch the ground when it was caught. Like, in American football, they have, 15 officials on the pitch, and then they have an eye in the sky all the way back in New York with, like, the most qualified referees who are sitting there watching, yeah, that was a catch, that wasn't, that should have been a mark, and it's instantaneous. And, like, look, I have a lot of sympathy for the referees, and almost none for the people giving out about the referees at this stage.
Is your sense that when you see this as a trend, when you listen to what was said at the Oireachtas committee recently, that this is a problem that all of Irish sport is going to have to tackle over the next little while, or are the GAA at the sharp end of this, and this is where we see it at its worst?
I mean, I don't know. I think that, like, I think that there was a lot of, you wouldn't see this. There was a lot of finger pointing from other sports going, you wouldn't see this in this sport. Now, in fairness, you don't really see this often in rugby. You do see a little bit of it in soccer, but the referee getting chased across the pitch in Croke Park, the referee getting chased across the pitch at that game yesterday in Roscommon, like, I haven't seen that a lot, I haven't seen that a lot. And you would hope that today we get very strong statements condemning this from the club, from the Connacht Council, from Croke Park, and from everybody, just to say, like, how are you going to get somebody to referee a game again like that? Like, how do you actually convince somebody to go out? And whatever the money is, it's not worth it. Like, the feeling of fear that you must have had when you are surrounded by an angry mob at the end of that match, and there's no real, there's certainly nobody in a Garda uniform. There's a few red bibs. And how willing are they to take a thump? I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, but it's definitely something that this specific issue today is a problem for the GAA, and they have to come out and be strong about it, you would hope. But yeah, like, is it a problem in wider Irish culture? I mean, I talk about this a bit, and everybody always complains, but, like, yeah, I think that, like, you see problems outside every chipper and every small town and every big town in Ireland.
It was less of an issue yesterday, but the referee did come in for a good deal of criticism, I think it's fair to say, in the Ballygunner Lochmore Castellani game. You had the two McGraths sent off. The Noel McGrath sending off was not a sending off, really, when you look back at the footage that's circulating on social media. But again, probably comes back to this idea about where's your eye in the sky. I think, does the ref even go over to his linesman for that particular sending off, or was it the other one? I'm not quite sure. But there is this sense that, particularly, football is a hard enough game to referee at the moment. Hurling's just on a completely different stratosphere. And I know Eamon Fitzmaurice made this point on the show before, that two referees need to be brought in ASAP to football. But if football's going to have something like that, and there's going to be a conversation about where the game goes in terms of its officiating over the next little while and giving referees more help, God, you'd have to think that hurling is on a level above that again, and the complicated nature of it, the speed of the game, makes it impossible to referee accurately.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you need to make sure you've got people who are experienced, and you need to make sure that the stewarding is ramped up. But like, you know, there's no accounting for the passions that overflow between rival clubs from the same town in some instances, or one town over. Like, and we're always told the great thing is that the supporters can all mix together and the players can all mix together. But like, you know, we just need to plan for the worst and hope for the best.
A couple of other things to get to in the red this morning. One thing in particular we want to touch on is Newcastle United, Ger. I mean, you're under the impression here that Eddie Howe could actually be someone that you need to keep an eye on in the sack race.
Well, I mean, Eddie Howe came in and they didn't really want him. And he's been okay. And then they got annihilated yesterday. And we've still got 2.5 weeks to go before they can get anybody in. And like, there's always this assumption too that the business is going to get done early in January. But traditionally, a lot of the business gets done. The whole point about deadline day is that everybody waits and waits and waits and waits because they think it's going to either drive the price up or the desperation levels are going to go up and the contracts will get bigger for everybody. It's in the agent's interest. So I don't know, is there a chance that Eddie Howe is sacked before the transfer window and they go for somebody who they think is going to be more likely to keep them up?
No, I don't think so. Was the Eddie Howe appointment not based on the prospect of him being a good championship manager as much as anything else?
No, there's no way that the billionaires are interested in playing championship football next season, surely.
But it's a reality. Like, I mean, they're not interested in it. Just like, I mean, Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City are all not interested in winning the Premier League title. They're all not interested in not winning the Premier League title. One of them, two of them, are going to do the thing that they don't want to do. There is a chance that Newcastle go down because they're not very good at football. They don't have a very good team. And chances are that there will be 17 teams better than them at the end of this year's Premier League. So I think there's absolutely a reality here where Newcastle go down, and the owners have to be aware of that. Just because they don't want it doesn't mean that they can't face into that. And like, who would be the ready-made replacement that you can be sure would be a better championship manager than Eddie Howe? I'm sure there is a list out there, to be fair. But I do think that a part of the appointment was like, if they go down, can you see Eddie Howe taking them back up? And I'd say the answer to that question is probably yes. Now, in fairness, they will have the strongest squad in the championship by a distance, and they will make signings in the summer regardless if they get relegated, and they will be raging hot favourites to win the championship convincingly. But I think there's a bit more medium-termism going on with the Eddie Howe appointment than maybe you think.
I'm not sure. I think that Eddie Howe was brought in to make sure that they don't get relegated, and he's failing at that job so far. And so I'm just looking at the odds here. Rafa Benitez is odds on. He's the favourite. And then after that, Hasenhüttl is next at 7 or 8 to 1. Claudio Ranieri up around 10 to 1. Daniel Farke at 12 to 1. Bielsa at 16. And Eddie Howe at 20. If Claudio Ranieri is in there at 10 or 12, right? So 10 is the biggest price. Then Eddie Howe at 20, I think, has got at least as good a chance as Claudio Ranieri being sacked. Ranieri's actually, I thought, done a pretty good job. Now, a collapse like the one that they had the other night is not going to stand him in good stead. But I'm not sure that new owners of a club are going to come in and go, oh, I've got loyalty to Eddie Howe. I've got money to burn. There are definitely going to be more managers who become available as the weeks pass. Anybody else on that list that Manchester United had? Like
Zidane.
Maybe they think Ernesto Valverde or somebody, I don't know. I just think you can't be getting hammered by Leicester, who aren't very good at the moment.
Yeah, like I mean, Newcastle will tell you they have more possession, more shots than Leicester yesterday. Still got beaten 4-0.
Yeah, there's a special prize for that.
There's a special prize. They had more passes as well. Pass accuracy was the same. I mean, they're trending in the right direction. They're doing okay. The thing is, I mean, what we're seeing here, obviously, if we get this three-horse race, I mean, we'll get into this later on with Mark Lawrence as well, but I'm not entirely convinced. The Saturday was kind of like a nervy experience for somebody who really wants to see a three-horse race, because at various different points you thought to yourself, right, if any of these three teams drop points here, you could see them maybe losing ground a little bit, and then maybe it becomes a two-horse race. I just think that the probability is that over the course of the next few weeks, somebody might drop off from that three-horse race, or somebody might go on an incredible run. So it's actually kind of nervous watching that. But the same thing kind of goes at the bottom of the table. We could be in for a brilliant relegation fight as well. The only thing is maybe if that kind of Everton Leeds Southampton cohort end up pulling themselves away from the bottom four, then maybe it's not fantastic. But I think Southampton could get drawn into it, and there could be five teams in a brilliant relegation battle all the way to May. So I don't know, I'm excited for that. Like, I think it's a decent shout on Eddie Howe, but I just think that maybe he's there for a longer haul, and I think he could be manager next year at the start of the championship season as Newcastle look to get promoted back to the top tier. As I say, we'd love to hear your comments on that, and they've been rolling in all morning, I think it's fair to say. There's been plenty on the rugby, plenty on the Mount Bellew situation as well. Jim Demp has been in touch to say Mount Bellew were a disgrace. They had the game cancelled for 3 extra weeks, and Padraig Pearce has never complained. Cora Sheehan said, if the ref sends players off if they verbally abuse them, it wouldn't be long stopping the culture of abuse towards refs and GAA. Is that an idea?
Yeah, it's a great idea. Yeah, and look, I think the other thing, we should mic up the referees. Pardon me. We should mic up referees at every game, right? So that the audio is there as a record of what's said to them. And we should definitely put it out live for inter-county games. That would very quickly tone down the language immediately. Somebody once said to me, oh, you can't do that. They've got to go to work on Monday. It's like, well, they're the same person. The fact that we know what they speak like on the field of play doesn't change our perception of them. Mm. It's just who they are. So either let them be better people, and let's train people to be better people, or let's allow somebody to completely abuse somebody verbally. Like, mic them up and send anybody off for anything approximating verbal abuse.
Tommy as well, just letting us know here that at the Oireachtas committee, it was noted that GAA Director General Tom Ryan appeared with National Match Officials Manager Donald Smith, who revealed that while 104 players were sent off at inter-county level over the course of 1,000 games this year, 3 instances were for the abuse of match officials. Now, so that's obviously something that you can imagine is being under-punished at the moment, and what the exact rules are, I'm not actually sure. But,
well, here's the thing, are those stats that are like, look, this isn't a problem at all. 1,000 matches, it happened 3 times. Like, that's not a big deal, is it? Do you know? How do you read it?
Yeah.
Do you read it as like, we're doing great on this because it only happened 3 times? Or it's like, we're not actually sending enough people off for doing it.
Yeah, probably lean towards the latter there, I think. And I mean, is there some sort of retrospective banning for managers as well who go OTT at the full-time whistle? Because that's something that we've seen quite a lot as well, is that at a full-time whistle, the manager just darts for the referee. Now, in fairness, we do see that in the Premier League quite a bit. We do see managers almost needing to be restrained a little bit, and that sideline anger can spill over and be directed at the referee as well. So, I don't know. I think that figure definitely suggests to me that there is probably a lot of abuse going underpunished on the pitch as well. But at the same time, I mean, there's probably a sense of pacifying people when it comes to being a GAA referee and kind of feeling a sort of sense of fortune that you're getting out of Dodge with your performances sometimes, and that's not a good situation to be in when you feel like you haven't messed things up too badly, or when you feel that people aren't giving you too much abuse at the end of a game. Plenty coming in on the Formula 1 as well, which will be our next item here on the performance rankings. It's in the grand, the F1 finish in the amber this morning, because I think there's kind of a mixed view on this about who is the winner here. For me, I think it's pretty clear cut. Formula 1 is the winner from yesterday, because what is Formula 1? It is a commercial sports organisation, and this all of a sudden was one of the biggest sports stories of the last few months. It has been a crazy year of sport. This was a very, very 2021 finish to what was a crazy season in general. But yesterday will go down as one of the most astonishing moments of the sporting year. Anyway, John Claffey's been in touch to say, I think the Drive to Survive producers were in the stewards' room calling the shots yesterday because Lewis was screwed. And that theme is out there. And like, Jerry, we don't have the same conversation as last week, but it's worth revisiting the conversation that we had last week, where you were making the point that Formula One has to be so thankful to Drive to Survive for its current popularity, which I agree with to a point. But I do believe that the popularity this season is as much down to the quality of the racing and to the quality of the storylines as it is down to a Netflix documentary about the sport. However, I wonder, does yesterday illustrate maybe a chicken and egg scenario here, where Drive to Survive is actually a product of Formula One seeking drama, Formula One trying to stoke tension and trying to create unbelievable narratives? And what we saw yesterday was may be a response to a situation, and the response being, let's make the situation as dramatic as possible.
You've spoken, I think, on this show before to Asif Kapadia. People will be familiar with his work. He made the Amy documentary, he made the Maradona documentary, he made the Senna documentary. And so he's a brilliant filmmaker and documentarian. On Twitter yesterday, he was absolutely fuming about this. And he makes the point far more better than I can. Since when was Formula One supposed to be exciting, he says on Twitter. That's the whole point of sport. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. You don't change rules mid-race or during a game at the last minute to force an exciting climax. A change which obviously favours one competitor, that's corruption. So, Owen, you can make the case, and I see from a pure, cold business perspective that the raging capitalist that you are,
yeah,
you think the shareholders' value has been maximised here, and that's great. That's great for the sport. But I'm just not sure. He's also retweeted Tariq Panja, who was on yesterday making fairly similar, excellent points about the whole thing. But the rules here, the commentators, you watched it live. The commentators apparently weren't entirely sure of the rules and how the rules work. There is like one specific rule 15 that allows the stewards to make this decision depending on what they see as the best potential thing for, you know, blah, 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 made up stuff. And it's about an interpretation of the rules and the drafting of the rules that has allowed this situation to happen. So for anybody who wasn't watching, you better explain it, right? But basically, Lewis Hamilton was winning this race. And then there's a crash, which didn't involve Lewis Hamilton or Max Verstappen. And the safety car comes out. And so the big lead that Lewis Hamilton has over Max Verstappen gets cut so that they're literally driving side by side for one lap. And then the safety car comes off and they go for the last lap.
Yeah.
And Verstappen's on faster tires. And so he wins with an overtaking maneuver. And that's it.
Yeah. The overtaking maneuver possible because Verstappen pitted, and obviously Mercedes were not going to do that with Lewis Hamilton because they would have lost track position at that point. So that probably made the difference in the end. But essentially, it felt, and again, I think I got the sense that the commentary team watching it on TV yesterday, it did feel like they were making it up as they were going along. There was no sense at all from people who have watched this sport for decades, who have been world champions. There was no sense from those people who were broadcasting to us yesterday that they knew what was going to happen. That this was all in the hands of Michael Massey, the race director yesterday. Whatever way he wanted this to go, it was kind of like he was Vince McMahon yesterday. And kind of like whatever storyline he wants to do, whatever business decision he wants to make, he can make it. The narrative is in his hands, which is extraordinary to think. Of course, I would argue that from a neutral standpoint, you could make a strong case that he made the right decision. Based on the fact that what did the neutrals want? They want excitement. They want racing. They want a proper lap of racing between the two people who were one and two in the race at the moment, rather than letting this thing play out behind the safety car.
Justice.
I mean, you could argue that. I mean, it was fair. I mean, like this safety cars happen all the time. The issue is obviously with the overtaking and allowing the cars that have been lapped by the leader to pass the cars that were in the lead. That's the big issue here. And that's the issue that has allowed essentially Verstappen to win the world title here. But because the fact that the commentators were so unsure about what was going to happen says to me that there is enough of a grey area here for Massey to make the decision that he did. And ultimately, when you look at the rules do say, while, I mean, you have the cars being lapped stipulation that you mentioned there, what is it, Article 48.12, there is the next or later article in it, I think it's 15.3, which gives the race director overriding authority on the use of the safety car. So
okay, so you're saying this is a winner. Us having conversations about 48.12, 15.3, winner, winner, chicken dinner, Formula One, you win, hooray! This is bollocks! Come on, you've actually talked yourself out of this, surely.
No, not at all. Absolutely not. This is a massive moment. This is a massive moment for what?
Win for the barristers. This is a win for the Court of Arbitration.
No.
This is not a sporting victory. Nobody's going to look at Formula One next season and go, "Oh, this is pure. This is great. This is the fastest car and the fastest driver against each other." Are they?
Tell me, what are you going to be doing next year in March when the new season rolls around? Is it Bahrain is the first one next year? Is yesterday going to make you more or less likely to watch that race?
I don't know. In fairness,
more likely is the answer. You too are a raging capitalist, and you like entertainment. You went to watch Elf in a drive-in cinema yesterday. You clearly enjoy good quality entertainment. That is a fact. You've exposed yourself at the top of the show this morning. If you like good quality entertainment, Formula One is for you.
Formula One is just entertainment now. It is not sport. It's we are to forget that there is like a rule book, and there is a sense at the start of the competition that this is fair. The two teams who are going for the title are actually off an equal footing. You're right. The game is rigged. Everybody knows that the game is rigged.
So you're telling me it's patently unfair than what happened. You're saying this is... So I couldn't make my mind up. Is this closer
to... To be honest, I'm not telling you anything, because I don't know enough about the rules, but I am telling you that any time a competition that goes to the very end, which looks like it, like even if Lewis Hamilton had won behind the safety car, it still went right to the very end. And that would have been fine. That would have been an okay outcome. But when you suddenly have people raging about the justice or injustice of the outcome, I don't see how you can put Formula One in the green. You wanted to put Formula One in the green because it was a big, big weekend, a big win for them. And I would have said, up until the last bit where like these fights happened, yeah, absolutely. But once you get to this scenario, it's broken. It's broken.
Sure. But no, hold on a minute. Show me the list of people other than massive Lewis Hamilton fans, massive Mercedes fans, who are coming out and saying that the absolutely wrong decision was arrived at. Like, again, I don't know enough to make a clear case. So I'm basing myself off what they were saying on TV yesterday. And certainly, like, I certainly got the sense on Sky that this was up for debate. That, you know, it was controversial for sure, but it was up for debate. This was not a bad decision. This was not Joe Sheridan throwing the ball into the loud net. This was not patently against the rules. There is enough of a grey area there for you to make the argument that the correct decision was arrived at, or it was fair game at least for Verstappen to be in that position at the end. So for me then, it isn't a scandal, it isn't a disgrace. It's actually closer to Aguero scoring in the 93rd minute than it is to Joe Sheridan throwing the ball into the back of the net. It is just an unbelievably late,
Aguero
dramatic moment of sporting theatre.
Aguero seems to have scored that goal under the rules that everybody knew they were playing in, but it turns out, as you pointed out, the people commentating on the sport, the world champion, didn't fully understand the rules. No one fully understood the rules, because actually the rules, the way they're drafted, according to the legal documents we're all reading this morning, are unclear. And as a result of that, Owen, you can't say that this has been a massive victory for the sport, because the sport looks opaque. Decisions are being made in committee rooms. One last point. Matt Lawton is on your side. He says, I think the FIA made the right call in race time. Nobody wanted to see the finale end with the drivers following the safety car. What we got was far more exciting.
Yeah.
That's, I think, your point. But Tariq Panjik comes back and goes, yeah, it's a fair enough. But then logic would follow that making up rules to make the end of a tight football or cricket match to add a bit of last-minute drama would also make a far better spectacle. Thing is, if you're a participant, how can you anticipate a sudden rule change? And he makes the point, why don't we change the rules of the Premier League? Suddenly, instead of fighting relegation, Norwich are in a one-match playoff with Newcastle for the title. And it's the other way around for Man City and Liverpool. Loser gets relegated match. It's like, what's the point of having the whole season come down to a bit where nobody understands what the rules are?
It's a bit disingenuous, though, to make that comparison, I think. Like, or the comparison isn't the same. I mean, it's a far more complicated thing where there is a bit more of a subjective nature to it than there would be in, say, changing the rules at the end of a football match. I don't think that comparison actually holds up. And I think that there is enough of an argument on either side to say that, again, at best, we don't know whether or not he made the right call. But what's the point in good sport if nobody's watching it, Jerry? I would say that Formula One is in quite a unique position now, given the last 15 years that they've had their superstar. They've come into a massive ebb where not nobody, but a large swathe of the world, a large swathe of the sports watchers of the world didn't really care what was going on, to a point now where the world really does care. Like, I think that is a success story. And
do they, though? Does anybody really care which of these multimillionaires has got a little bit richer as a result? I'm not sure they do.
And so, like, I mean, does that inform your entire view of sport then, which...
Not the richness of a person.
You're just an amateur. You just watch your GAA because they don't get paid. Is that the only way sport can tug at your heartstrings?
I'm all about the grassroots. College football, I like that too. Skeletrics for grown-ups was the description that I saw. I don't quite go that far, Owen, but I can see how people think that, you know?
Let's move on to the good this morning. We'll quickly mention Katie Taylor here. I mean, speaking of people who are earning or about to earn lots and lots of money, are you now going to turn Katie Taylor's fight off next year when she fights Amanda Serrano because she's going to earn 1.5 mil?
Oh, look at you with your crap segues. No, of course not. She deserves the money. She fought for nothing for Ireland for so long. She absolutely deserves the money. That's the complete opposite of this, right? That's the complete opposite of these pampered divas who drive Formula One cars. Katie Taylor finally getting the payday she deserves. I was really worried about this fight on. I'm not going to lie to you. I think I said it on the show last week. The odds seemed ridiculous for a fighter coming out of the Eastern Bloc, you know, to use all the cliches that we don't really know that much about. And we're not quite sure about, like, I saw Alan Moore on Twitter saying that she'd beaten not very good opponents, but, you know, they got her to this point where she was ready to fight, and she came with a good build-up game. And Katie Taylor was doing that interview with Donald McRae talking about the Serrano fight. And you just are always worried in any sport, but particularly in boxing, where one punch can ruin everything. But she took care of business, and now it's the super fights, and it should only be the super fights from this point forward. She should stop worrying about keeping belts or any of that kind of stuff. It's like, fight the super fights for the money, fight them and get out. That's what hopefully happens from here on. So
yeah, an interesting one. It was a bit of a slog fest on Saturday. She was too fast, probably too capable of picking off her opponent. And in the aftermath, she said that she was scrappy inside. She was holding a lot inside. So she came here to kind of slog it out, it seemed, Sharapova. And she wasn't successful in the end. Katie Taylor's 15th defence of her title. And as you say, all eyes now on next year. Eddie Hearn referring to it as the biggest fight in women's boxing. Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano at the Garden. Serrano's in action next weekend against Miriam Gutierrez. Taylor beat Gutierrez in 2020 on a unanimous decision. So he'd probably be able to make a bit of a comparison about where Serrano is in comparison to Katie Taylor after that one. Right, we've got one more to go through this morning, Jaron. It's getting a lot of pre-reaction, I want to say, on our YouTube comments this morning. It is the Munster win in Coventry yesterday. Like, for me, this is an amazing win. I mean, there is this automatic tendency, I find, in some quarters to downplay the situation yesterday or to downplay this achievement by Munster. But yes, Wasps are bad, but the Munster situation is incredible, really. Like, it's astonishing when you look at the team sheet even on Friday, and you're going through these players and you're like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Who is this guy? To go out and actually win convincingly. Like, that's a really important part of the narrative as well coming out of yesterday, is that they went to Coventry and they trashed Wasps. Yes, they had an extra man and Wasps aren't in a good place themselves. But this team, 12 debutants in the squad, went and trashed Wasps in a European night. I think that's a pretty remarkable day for Munster.
Yeah, and then the DVDs will be being sold from the car boots next week, and the play opens the day after Christmas, right? It's a panto. Look out, he's behind you. And it's the guy from Wasps who got sent off. Who's that guy? I don't know. That was going to happen.
Well, Eamon O'Loughlin in the comments agrees with you. How was everyone saying that the Munster result was something amazing? They played against a weak Wasps side who had 13 players. To say the narrative has been blown out of proportion is an understatement. Shows how far Munster have fallen.
No. I'm joking, obviously. I do think it's a truly remarkable achievement. Just so that this doesn't get clipped up in the wrong way, I think I say fair play to Munster. It's ridiculous what they've done. It's like, to get those players up to the level where they can play Heineken Cup. They could have been, like, in the old days, the Italians used to have their teams grandfathered into the competition, and it was a guaranteed 5-point bonus point victory home and away. Like, even if it had been them that they were playing, to get players who were fresh out of school or playing AIL, currently playing AIL, ready for one of those matches and experience exactly what it's like, that's a sensational thing. And do you know what? The Munster Academy has been one of the most criticised institutions in Irish sport over the last two decades. Like, where are the young players coming through? Where are the young players? There's no young players coming through. Well, it turns out there's loads of them, and they're match ready, and some of them you would hope will be in the squads. And I would say the Munster hierarchy are looking at this going, this is sweet. We're ready to absolutely stuff our squad with these guys. They're ready for it, and it's going to save us a lot of money into the future. It's a massive, massive moment, I think, for the team and their self-belief, and even the style that they were using was consistent with the style that was supposed to be the Larkham imprint. So look, I mean, I think by all means we shall take the piss out of the play and the songs and the DVDs, but they deserve it.
John Dooley agrees with Eamon in the comments, says Munster had 9 or 10 internationals, hardly the junior team out playing. Gerard Fitzpatrick has referred to it as the miracle of Coventry. We're going to have a panto at Cork Opera House starring Ronan O'Gara as Jesus Christ, Quinny as Joseph, Woody as Mary, Three Wise Men are Claw, Bull Hayes and Eddie O'Sullivan. Not to be missed, kids will love it.
Daniel, you do that poster up today, it's going to do great business.
Absolutely. We're going to get to Ronan O'Gara in a little while, but I'm with you on that. Like I think that if you want to focus in on one of the elements of it, it is the real excitement that yesterday probably gives for a lot of Munster fans, given the narrative was there's only one academy that matters in Ireland, and everybody's like living off the Leinster Academy right now. I think yesterday showed that actually it's a pretty bloody good conveyor belt of talent coming through in Munster as well. And yes, it is, I guess, a huge part of it is the AIL, which has been struggling in recent years. But I think maybe yesterday serves as a reminder of how important that league is as well, that these kids, they've been getting road tested in the All-Ireland League over the past couple of years. Like that's a pretty important testing ground, and I think that maybe it just puts that under the magnifying glass again a little bit yesterday, that this stuff needs to be looked after from an IRFU standpoint.
One of the things that has come out of COVID is a load of stuff that we didn't expect would ever happen has happened much more quickly than we thought possible, specifically if you think of the split season in GAA. Perhaps this is an opportunity for the provinces to look at the AAL and start making sure that players play games game after game after game after game in the AAL when they're in the sub-academy and then in the academy, as opposed to rotting on the bench, never getting any game time. So, look, I don't know enough about the player management and the load management and the all that kind of stuff, or how you would actually make sure that the safety of the players who aren't professionally contracted is managed. But surely they are problems that we can overcome, and surely there are big enough brains. There are certainly people getting paid enough money within the IRFU to come up with a solution for this. And again, you know, like let's just jam that in there and see what happens for a year or two.
For sure. Right, it is 10 minutes past 8 on this Monday morning. You're with us here on OTBAM. It's brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Pack show still to come here on OTBAM. We're talking rugby with Ronan O'Gara next.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette.
OTBAM.
With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.